Welcome to Pot and Public Policy. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today on the program, we have John Hudak. He's a senior fellow for governance studies and the deputy director of the Center for Effective Public Management at the Brookings Institute. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
With marijuana reform taking such a prominent level, gaining such attention at the state level, it's interesting to watch how the federal government is reacting to the states. And we have a number of congressmen who are working to reform federal laws to help the states that have passed these marijuana reforms. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what's happening at the federal level with respect to marijuana issues?
I think for people in the marijuana advocacy community, this new Congress is an exciting time and offers an exciting space. And here's why. I'm not going to say that all of the challenges facing the marijuana industry or all of the wants and needs of the marijuana advocacy community are going to be achieved or delivered by this Congress. In fact, I would venture to guess that probably none of them will be. But there's been a real change in tone in this Congress, and that's the first step toward federal level, meaningful federal level policy change. What you're seeing is that in the wake of really divisive partisanship and investigations into the president and criticisms of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, you're seeing marijuana poke through as something that people are very eager to unite around. And it ends up being, in some ways, a safe space that cuts above this partisan gridlock. And, you know, we've seen this week there was a press conference on Capitol Hill with Tom Garrett, a Republican from Virginia, and Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat from Hawaii, coming together, two people who almost certainly don't vote together on many things, talking about a new bill that they have called Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act. And that is something that speaks not just to the nature of their engagement, but to the engagement between many members of Congress. It's moving into the Senate in a way that I think is starting the ball rolling toward serious change in the coming years.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask if you thought the scandals surrounding the Trump administration with regard to Russia and everything that's going on there might suck all the oxygen out of the room and make it impossible to move forward. But it sounds as if you're saying this is a welcome respite from all of that for some of our Congress members.
I think it really is, but I will caution to say that I do think that the investigations into the president, which are seemingly getting more complex and more serious every day, will suck the oxygen out of the room in terms of passing legislation. And so this happens in Congresses during periods of scandal, whether they're congressional scandals or they are presidential scandals. And I think regardless of your position on whether the president has done something very wrong, or that his team has, or that you think that this is drummed up nonsense, the reality is these are serious investigations, serious in the sense that they are ongoing, they are widespread, and they are taking a lot of congressional attention. And so that naturally does affect the progress and the capacity and the productivity of a Congress. But what we're finding is that beyond being able to vote, I think members of Congress are getting to know each other around these issues. And when you're a member of Congress and you're day after day just at each other's throats with the other side, having some issue, any issue, whether it's criminal justice reform, whether it's marijuana policy, whether it's veterans issues, the opioid crisis, if there's a place that you can talk to someone from the other party, I think most of your listeners probably won't believe it, but members of Congress actually like that. They like having that opportunity. And in a big way, marijuana is that opportunity.
Interesting. And you mentioned the change of tone up on Capitol Hill. And I saw a tweet coming across this week where Ben Sasse and Chuck Schumer, two senators, were making some sort of joke about how it looked like they were smoking reefers in one of their photographs. Meanwhile, on the other side of the aisle, you get people like Jeff Sessions and Governor Chris Christie, Attorney General Sessions and Governor Chris Christie, who are seemingly trying to revive the gateway theory and the drug policies of the 1980s. So speak a little to that, to the tone, and whether the tone is better on one side of the aisle or the other.
You know, I think it's hard to imagine that there's a scenario in which Democrats don't just relish the opportunity to stick it to President Trump. And in many ways, they certainly do. But the magnitude of the scandals that are going on right now actually becomes sickening to members of Congress on both sides. And so in those situations, there's actually some real motivation to get away from it and to talk to each other and to get to know each other and to talk about something other than Donald Trump and Russia and Mike Flynn and the rest. And so there's this picture from Capitol Hill where Senator Sass from Nebraska's in running clothes, and Chuck Schumer looks like he's just coming off the set of the newest Hangover movie. His tie's undone, his hair's a mess, his shirt's unbuttoned, and Tom Cotton from Arkansas has his back to the camera, and of course he's buttoned up like a narc. But it's a really silly picture, but I think it speaks to this real desire for people to break away from it, even if it's for a few minutes, and just, you know, shoot the shit about something else. And then, like you said, you have the other side, which is a few members of the administration, some number of members of this administration, who are actively building a time machine back to the 1950s when it comes to drug policy, where the solution to addiction is criminalization, where the gateway theory is something that hasn't been disproven, that there's something about our criminal justice system that means we need to fill more prisons and take opportunities away from more people. And it's this weird disconnect in Washington, and disconnects in Washington are certainly nothing new. But it is odd when you look at Congress, which is usually so detached from what the public is thinking, actually doing a lot of things that the public is asking for, and at least trying to behave a little more civilly. And you contrast that with an administration that is new to office, and you would think would be riding on the wave of public sentiment, in many cases doing everything they can to subvert public sentiment and the public will.
One of those subversions of the public's will seems to be the reversal of the Holder era memo that relaxed some of the prosecutorial standards with regards to mandatory minimum sentences. And I was a bit taken aback by the bipartisan condemnation of that move. And even from outside of politics, we had Christian broadcaster Pat Robertson, the former 1980s presidential candidate, excoriating Attorney General Sessions for this move. Did that catch you by surprise, the wholesale condemnation, it seems?
It did not, actually. And here's why I wasn't surprised, because it's such bad policy. You know, most people, when there's a new policy, you know, they fall in line behind what their party thinks. And then there are policies that are so beyond the pale that even your partisanship can't make you look the other way. And this is Jeff Sessions. This isn't U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. This is old-timey Alabama Attorney General Jeff Sessions at work. And this policy is not something that is thoughtful. It's not something that is in line with what most Americans think. It's something that's hateful. It's something that's going to have very serious racial effects. It's something that both empowers prosecutors to do things and then also restricts prosecutors from doing things. And so let me break that down a little. The Attorney General is encouraging U.S. attorneys to explore as much as they can to get to a certain outcome. So that offers some prosecutorial discretion. And prosecutorial discretion, particularly in the criminal justice system, is oftentimes the capstone of change. But what he also does is he hems in the U.S. attorneys, the federal prosecutors, by saying, if you deviate from mandatory minimum sentences, from just oppressively harsh charges and sentencing, you have to explain exactly why, and we're going to be watching you at every step. And so for these small government conservatives, they certainly look like big government, big brother, pro-prison, there's not even an ideology or a party to slap onto the end of that one. And so, yeah, it's very alarming. And in terms of the bipartisan condemnation, I think, like with marijuana policy, it's one of those things that people can join hands and agree on. And I mean, when you have, you know, Bernie Sanders agreeing with the Koch brothers, that gives you an idea of how devastating this this policy really is, and just how bad, like I said at the beginning, just how bad it is. It's just stupid public policy from a man who doesn't get it.
Well put. And one last topic to discuss as far as at the federal level, protections for the states that are engaged in reforming their marijuana laws. We did see the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment included with the federal appropriations package. How long does that protect us? And do you have any updates on, I heard there was a problem with including North Dakota in that.
Sure. So the what is now the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Amendment, which was previously the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment, but Sam Farr has since retired from Congress, was part of the continuing resolution that was passed last month that continued funding the U.S. government through September. And so this is good law. The same protections that were in place last time around this will continue in place until September, except other states that have since amended their laws to include, to expand medical marijuana, have been included with, oddly, the exception of North Dakota, because I haven't heard exactly why that is, but they were left off the list. I do think that North Dakota, if the system got up and running and federal prosecutors stepped in and tried to do something, North Dakota would probably have some sort of claim to say that the legislative intent was to cover all states and that their exclusion was a mistake. It's not a solid claim, but it could be one that is made. But the reality is North Dakota just newly legalized medical marijuana. The system is going to be slow to get started, especially with a governor who's opposed. And this amendment, the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment, expires in September when the federal funding, the continuing resolution funding the government expires. And so my guess is in the next round they'll fix these things. It should come as a surprise to no one that members of Congress screw things up once in a while, and I think this was sort of a basic screw-up.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. John Hudak is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute, working on governance studies, and we appreciate your expertise here on Pot and Public Policy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.